Hello, podcast listeners. Today we will be discussing my personal opinions and analysation based on the message version of Genesis 2. We do have a special guest just for this episode, who is my cousin,
Lily. Hello, guys.
She will also be sharing her personal opinions on Genesis 2. I will be using the separation technique of analysation, meaning that I will be explaining my opinions and then seeing my guest's opinion on the same section. So, if we begin the first verse, which says, "Heaven and earth were finished," down to the last detail. This is sort of recapping what we discovered in Genesis 1, due to it reminding us how heaven and earth had been created. However, then it goes on to tell us something that we did not know, which is that there is only one more little detail.
So, my opinions is, I think it's quite a nice thing that proves that God put as much as effort and love and care into making earth as great as heaven, and which I think shows how much he really loves and cares for us.
Yeah, it shows how it really just explains with an insight of how he made it and why he made it, and that's really meaningful.
It is, yeah. It gets me, you know.
Yeah.
It gets me.
Then, from verse 2 to 4, it says, "By the seventh day, God had finished his work. On the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day. He was done. This is the story of how it all started, of heaven and earth when they were created. Now, this explains how God rested on the seventh day and made it a holy day, also introducing the Adam and Eve story. I think it's interesting how they really did become the holy day, because the Sunday, the seventh day of the week, is the typical day when you would go to church to worship God or Jesus or the Holy Spirit. Then it sums up the two verses by saying how that is how heaven and earth were created.
That's what I was going to say as well, with the with Sundays being the day we go to church. Mm. And that's always, before I read it, I always wondered, when I was little, I always wondered why we go to church on Sundays. And then I read the Bible and I was like, it all makes sense. Mm. Because he works 6 days a week, which sometimes people do have to do.
Yeah.
And then they take Sundays off, whether if they work in a shop or something, Sundays are normally, that's the day when they close. So, and it's quite an old tradition thing, you close on Sundays.
I meant to mention that as well, how it says that, how it just explains that bit where we realise that the stores and the restaurants always either close early or don't open on Sundays. And that's because they need their rest on Sunday, because Sunday is the rest day.
It's the rest day, that's what I'm going to call it from now on.
The rest day. You've got to not do homework on Sundays now. You do realise that, right? But you've got to do it all on Saturday. Verses 5 to 7 say, "At the time God made earth and heaven, before any grasses or shrubs had sprouted from the ground, God hadn't yet sent rain on earth, nor was there anyone around to work the ground. The whole earth was watered by underground springs. God formed a man out of dirt from the ground, so he blew in his nostrils the breath of life. The man came alive, a living soul." So that, to us, is odd, because many would think of it as supernatural. I think God did do this, but it is still symbolic. I think this because it is showing the growth of a human in a different way. We were originally made from the natural surroundings. It was God's way of building this figure to be on earth and enjoy how it has.
It does make sense. It is kind of weird. He made a man out of dirt.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of gross, but it's very symbolic. Mm. And I think if you look through a lot of the Bible, lots of things God does is very symbolic, I think.
But they're still real. Like, it's symbolic, but we still believe it because it's real.
It's symbolic, but he likes to do symbolic things, I think.
Yeah.
And
that's why
it proves that the foundations of the earth were made of dirt and grass. Mm-hmm. And labour is kind of thing we talk about.
Mm.
Made God tried his best and made it like kind of like a mountain. If you have a strong foundation, the rest of it will stay up.
That makes very much sense.
And it's symbolic to a, it's the same with human life.
Mm-hmm.
He made earth out of the ground. He makes the first person living on it out of the ground. It makes sense.
And lots of his parables and stories do consist of realism and symbolic elements. And I think that's really interesting when you compare the two and how there's so many differences, but there's so many... It's just crazy.
It is crazy.
It's just crazy. Okay.
Everything God does is crazy.
So, crazy, but amazing.
Genius.
Genius. Verses 8 to 9 say, "Then God planted a garden in Eden in the east. He put the man he had just made in it. God made all kinds of trees grow from the ground. Trees beautiful to look at and good to eat. The tree of life was in the middle of the garden, also the tree of knowledge of good and evil." This is introducing the magical tree in the core of God's garden. This tree contains the knowledge of good and evil, meaning that it contains the power of all knowledge of good and evil. Now, this is the first time when we are shown that evil is a thing. This is preparing us for what could happen because God hasn't mentioned it.
Yes, that is true. And I always think of the garden as like the earth kind of thing, because it's God's garden. He's mm-hmm. got, he's made this, he's made it out of the ground. It's his creation. And you're right about the evil actually being real, because we think of God as pure and light and just wholeheartedly good. And then this thing called evil comes along and it's confused everybody, because we're like, what is this?
Yeah, I agree with you about the garden thing again, because it's another symbol.
It's another
symbol. The garden that he took so much time and work into, like, he created a new type of being just so that that garden could stay in health. That's like what he does for us. He watches over us all the time, in any way, in anything, and we need to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so verses 10 to 14 say, "A river flows out of Eden to water the garden, and from there divides to four rivers." Now, I may not be good with these words. The first is named Pishon.
We think.
I don't know. It flows through Havilah, where there is gold. The gold of the land is good. The land is also known for a sweet-scented resin and the onyx stone. The second river is named Gihon. It flows through the land of Cush. The third river is named Hiddekel and flows east of Asherah. And the fourth river is the Euphrates. This is explaining how there is separation. Detailed information has been used, such as the names of the rivers which divide this garden for a purpose.
Yeah, it's also kind of, again, symbolic
yes.
of how over time we became divided in our countries, in our communities.
Yep.
It's already starting to show that the garden, which is the earth at the moment, is already divided, and once more people come to it, people start claiming the lands around it.
Definitely.
And there'll be arguments and fights which find out in the future, and it just proves that not everything is as good as it seems.
Exactly.
In this garden of life.
Definitely true. So 15 says, "God took the man and set him down into the Garden of Eden to work the ground and keep it in order." Now we are told how the man is there to support God when keeping his creations in order.
Yes. It also proves like how God now, what you said earlier about God creating this man to mm-hmm. protect his garden. That's what he wants.
Yes.
He wants it to be good and healthy, and he knows once more people start coming to this earth, he can't look over this garden and everyone else and make sure everyone's okay. He needs people who he trusts to be able to do work for him.
And another thing that links to that is definitely responsibility.
Yes.
Those humans are given responsibility over what he has made. He trusts us, which again, we have to remember for our own personal reasons. Okay, so 16 to 17 says, God commanded the man, you can eat from any tree in the garden, except from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat from it. The moment you eat from that tree, you're dead. This suddenly became a dark warning from God. He wanted the man to be safe from this temptation of good and evil tree. He abided God's rule and regulation, which is all God asked of the man.
That is true. And he can eat from all the garden. And it sounds like it looks very lush and yummy. And so I don't know why you would want to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. But it's quite tempting. And God tells you to do something, you should respect what he wants. It's like a normal person as well.
Yeah.
Someone wants to protect their privacy on a lion, which is what we talk about a lot at school. You need to be able to respect that.
Definitely.
Yes.
I definitely agree with that. And I also think the fact that he just says you're dead just sort of sums up how God feels about that tree.
Yeah.
And the whole reason, like the whole reason for us humans being tempted when people say don't do this and then we feel like we want to do it.
Yeah.
Because they've literally told you not to do it. And I think everybody has at least one of those experiences in their
yes,
lives.
Yes, definitely. Especially when you're younger. And yes. I also add that I don't think that God would be the one to, like, say you're, like, kill you kind of thing.
No.
I think it would be the tree.
Yes, definitely.
Not God. I don't think when he says you're dead, I think he means the tree will tempt you so far into evil and things that aren't good that you will, there'll be no turning back for you.
Because in movies sometimes they're like, when there's
your soul is unredeemable or something like that.
Yeah, just like you're dead and then they just stab them or whatever.
But it's not, that's not what it's like.
No,
because God isn't going to kill you. It's
no.
not going to happen.
No, no, no.
You can carry on now.
That's good. So 18 to 20 says, God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I'll make him a helper, a companion. So God formed from the dirt of the ground all the animals of the field and all the birds of the air. He brought them to the man to see what he could name them. Whatever the man called each living creature, that was its name. The man named the cattle, named the birds of the air, named the wild animals. But he didn't find a suitable companion. This is interesting because it discusses how originally he was planning on making one of the animals his companion, but he did not think any were suitable to help him. We are so used to just meeting Eve, spoiler, that we do not think about what happens between meeting Adam to Eve.
That is true. When you think about Adam and Eve, you think they were made at the same time.
Yes.
But it proves that Adam was made first. And that's probably why, I mean, this is sad first, but it's probably why quite later on in, like, the past kind of thing, is women had to fight for their votes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like,
that's what people.
No offence to God, but Adam was created first. So, like, they were the first, men were the first.
Men are depicted to be, like, stronger. And
yeah.
That's one of the reasons. It's definitely not all of the reasons, but that's one of the reasons.
I also think the birds and all the animals that he had, it wasn't a suitable companion. I don't think he was just thinking of helping him grow the garden.
No, he wasn't.
He was like, I want to be able to communicate with this person and be able to talk to him.
Definitely.
I want someone to talk to, like, have a friend.
And I think
animals are good, they're really good, I love them, but they're not very good for talking to.
No.
They just meow at you, is what my cat does.
Yeah. And also I think the interesting thing about that is how he needed Eve. So it doesn't really explain that in, like, for example, kids' versions when it simplifies the Bible and its meaning and some of the words in it, because not all kids understand many definitions. And it doesn't really talk about, it just kind of, like you said, talks about how Adam was made and then Eve was made. And I think we really need that bit in the middle to show that Adam needed Eve.
Yes.
I think that's really key.
He needed us.
He needed another one of his species, which is pretty much the whole reason that Adam needed that species is the reason that we're here today.
Yes.
Okay.
So well done, Adam.
Yes, well done, Adam. Okay.
So that was the moral of the story, kids.
Yes.
Well done, Adam.
So 21 to 22 says, wait, because we haven't read the next bit, and I don't think I'd say well done to Adam or Eve. So 21 to 22 says, God put the man into a deep sleep. As he slept, he removed one of his ribs and replaced it with flesh. God then used this rib that he had taken from the man to make a woman and presented her to the man. God decided to make another being for Adam because he did not think any of the other animals were good enough.
Wow, good enough. That's quite a word that you wouldn't expect God to think.
No.
When you think everyone's equal.
But he just, I feel like he understood Adam so much.
Yes. It was like, he's not a spiritual being anymore. It's like, no wonder Jesus was created. He felt so connected to the humans already that he thought, what if I can interact with them? They need more connections. And taking out a rib is kind of weird.
But at that stage of life...
Wait, did they have three ribs then? Because don't we have two ribs?
I have no idea. Anyway, I don't know. Anyway,
I'm confused.
I'm pretty sure because of how early that stage was, it didn't really matter about that bit.
Yeah.
I think true. That's just to show that Eve was always a part of Adam,
yeah.
Which is why they were always so friendly to each other and connected.
Yeah.
And they're more like...
Connected also.
Yeah, like friends and things like that.
And then also and romantically connected.
Sort of, yeah.
I mean, I think, anyway.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, people think that, but we don't really know.
We don't know. It doesn't say. I don't think God interrupted much in that part. I think it was private.
No.
So we don't know.
Because that was way past. We couldn't even think about discoveries for that. So, 23 to 25 says, then man said, finally, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. Name her woman, for she was made from man. Therefore, a man leaves her father and mother and embraces his wife. They become one flesh, the two of them, the man and his wife, were naked, but they felt no shame. So he has just found that he is a companion and thanks God for what he did, and because of the normality at the time, that they were not ashamed even though they were naked. You may think that that might be a random thing to write, however, it does prepare us for what happens in the temptation, and it also talks about the connection that I was talking about.
Yes, it does, and I think he's very happy. He says, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean like when you think of like child is like, oh, this is me, this is like part yeah. of me, but he means like finally someone who has like the same thing as me. The animals were like lower than the humans in intelligence
finally
wise.
Someone who can understand me,
finally someone who's the same as me, flesh of my flesh,
yeah,
like flesh and flesh, the same, exactly the same,
definitely.
And even it is a weird thing to say they were naked but not embarrassed, but it proves that they so needed each other that even if they were naked, they still could feel happy and they still could like each other. And
back then,
be friends.
Yeah, and back then, God taught them about how they should not be ashamed of anything, for they are who they are, and nobody should change that. Which is one, what we need to remember, and two, little ones listening, do not run naked into the street.
Even if you don't feel embarrassed, just don't do it.
This is just another way of almost representation. Another way of symbolising.
Lots of symbols in this.
Yes. It's symbolising how we shouldn't be ashamed and how they shouldn't have been ashamed.
Yes.
Because they were who they were. Even though
because
there was
of God.
Only, mm-hmm. And even though there was only two of them, and even though it was basically one of them, they still shouldn't be worried about anything. And they deserve to just rest and look after what God has told them to look after.
Do you know what's also weird?
What?
It kind of sounds like Eve. Imagine if this theory was real. Eve was just like in his head.
Yes, that can...
Some people do say that because it's like... It took a rib away, so Eve was made out of Adam. So it could be that, I don't think this is true, but it could be that Eve was just in Adam's head.
Yes, I definitely agree
with that. A companion that he needed so much, needed to talk to. It's like kids as well, it's happened for mental health. When kids think they don't have anyone to talk to, they make up people that understand them, they're going through the exact same things as them. So it happens in normal psychology, and it could have happened to Adam. Mm-hmm. We don't know. It was so long ago, nobody knows.
Also, what we haven't talked about is this part where it says, woman, for she was made from man.
Is that why it's woman? Like man?
That's why it's woman. Yes, woman. But also, it's really interesting because he named someone after him.
Very arrogant. Just saying.
I just think he named the person another species of himself after him. So that he could, one, remember the name of the species.
Do you know, he's like Gilderoy Lockhart.
Hmm?
Just, you know, in Harry Potter, Gilderoy Lockhart.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry, I just think it's like he's so full of himself. He's like, I'll name a species after me. It feels like something he would do.
Or it could just be because he wants to remember that one person. He wants to remember that also. He put part of, that was part of him. That's why it's woman and man. Because woman has part of it, which is man.
Which is very... So they want to be part of each other.
So it all sort of combines and connects. It. You can see the dots linking there.
It's like a dot, dot.
Yeah.
You see them coming together.
Mm-hmm.
Just what picture it is, we don't really know. Because you can never tell in history.
And again, finally, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. I think that is very interesting because you can really expand in that because you've got bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. It sort of repeats it. And that's really interesting to me because it repeats that line. And I just think it's how I remember somebody, a very wise person, once told me how... Ooh. The first few chapters of the Bible is like a poem.
Poem.
It all connects.
Symbolic.
It's very symbolic.
And poems also, are symbolic and I do not like it.
Also, the Genesis 1 is very poetic. The way it's written and the way it's described, I just think that's very, very interesting. And so I'm very grateful for that wise person and I hope that they will hopefully see this. Okay,
yes.
So thank you for listening to today's podcast through apps. Have a brilliant day, podcast listeners. Also, thank you for being with us today. And I hope this analysis helped.
Yay. Woo woo.
Have a brilliant day, guys.